This episode of Weekly Spooky is brought to you by Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer, available on paperback and ebook on Amazon.com. A good babysitter is hard to find, especially when they're all dead. Larkin's first night with the Babysitter's Club has her filling in for a friend that's blowing off work for a hot date. The simple little lie will have dire consequences that trigger a series of unthinkable events and spurs a killer's need for revenge. With the bodies and suspects stacking up, can Larkin unmask the Kohler slasher? Or will she become another victim of Daddy's Little Killer? From the twisted mind of Weekly Spooky writer David O'Hanlon comes the first book in the Babysitter Massacre franchise series created by me. So check it out right now. Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer, available now on ebook or paperback at Amazon.com.
What's that? You want to be scared? Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listeners in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my friends. Henrik Kuto here, your host and narrator, and thank you for joining me for another piece of Spooky on the Weekly, and this is the last episode of 2020. I hope you're all having a pretty darn good holiday season. It's coming to an end. I know I have eaten so much leftover ham that I can't help but be at least a little happy about it. But this week we have something extra special for you, something that's about time running out, about what happens when you reach a conclusion, how you got there, and more importantly, the fact that often we don't even really think about what'll be waiting for us when we get there. Yeah, in this particular case, it's all about vengeance. About revenge, about dishing out comeuppance on New Year's Eve, over and over again, hoping for something. But what is it exactly? Well, my friends, all will be revealed in today's story. So before we get to it, make sure to subscribe on whatever podcast app you're listening on or on YouTube. Make sure to send us an email at weeklyspooky@gmail.com and let us know what you're enjoying, what you'd like to hear more of, or even send us a story if you'd like us to consider it. Oh yes, my friends, I'll jaw at you a lot more afterward, but for now, I just cannot wait. Let's get to the story right now. Satan's Shotgun by Daniel Wilder. I had a revelation come New Year's Eve of 1899. Jesus, ain't nothing. I reckon I could resurrect myself like a right heavyweight champion. Long as my boy's bones held out, that is. But admittedly, I couldn't hold a candle to that water to rot gut routine, and I sure as fuck couldn't walk on water, and there sure as shit ain't any virgins in my vicinity. I guess I truly meant that coming back from the dead wasn't any great shakes. What brought me to that bit o' revelation were the events of nearly 12 years prior. 1887, if you can cipher. The night Gideon Farrow's Nightmare Zodiac Death Gang came a-knockin'. And that's exactly as those hocus-pocus braggarts build themselves, too. Nightmare Zodiac Death Gang should have spent more time practicing with pistols than coming up with candy-ass gang titles. But I digress. You see, I was a simple man then. Farming, maybe a bit of trapping, not to mention interpreting for the local tribes and those they cottoned to trade with. It wasn't the high life, but it was good enough for me, Elizabeth, and our boy Lazarus. That name was a bit of a on-the-nose serendipity that the fates served up to us by and the by. Let me tell you true, and I sure as hell wasn't amused. 'Twern't 18 months after our boy's birth that the sack-headed sidewinder Gideon and his posse arrived on our doorstep and ended his life, and his mama's. But as was their folly, they never checked if my heart had stopped. And to be fair, I never asked them why they were so sore with me in mind. So yeah, mistakes were made all around on that day. So once their devilish deeds were done, they headed off into the still night with nary a thought of the hell they had borne that day. And still my heart continued to beat like a native drum, a doom dirge banging away to attract any midnight motherfucker within 666 yards. And attract, it surely did. The shaman entered what remained of our home, casual as can be. The fully bandaged man he led on a leash followed, seemingly devoid of thought, as well as grace. He slinked his way over to me like a mongoose, all sinew and glide, the bones around his waist clanking together like the gnashing teeth of some desert devil risen from an unholy hell, ready to feast. As my eyes strained to focus, I saw that bastard light a fire of green flame, a flame he used to rend the prone form of my boy to ashes and bone in as much time as it takes to tell. I admit the darkness took me then, as I was a powerful sight weaker in constitution than I am now. Though I have a dread vision of that bandaged fella placing a lipless mouth over my own and blowing a dust that reeked to high hell of rot deep into my lungs that made them feel as if they was filled with the fire of old Scratch himself. I came to walking along a trail deep in the nearby Adirondacks, a foul-scented wrapping from the shaman's friend tied tightly around my eyes. While you may get to thinking that would seriously impede my journey, the exact opposite held true. I could sense where I was going, and just where the first of those I sought were hunkered down. So onward I trekked, my boy's bones rattling in the leather sack strapped to my left shoulder. That same rattle let any man or beast in my path know that I surely was not to be fucked with as I began my stride along Revenge's rough road. I walked those wicked woods until the sun fell low and the sky was streaked in hues of lavender and rose, and it was then I came upon the cabin, on New Year's Eve, painted as it were in two differing colors, sky blue and soft pink, the abode of Gemini, two doses of poison in one pill. The smoke that poured from the chimney let me know those that needed correcting were home sweet home. I didn't stand on formality. The door exploded inward from the impact of my left shit kicker, splinters spreading out like buckshot acting as my calling card. It took me a fraction of a second to realize no one was visible in the room, magic eyewear or no, but I could smell them just fine. Naturally, they didn't surprise me none when they exploded from the shadows of the cabin ceiling. However, the fact that they could move together like a great spider in their conjoined state definitely raised an eyebrow. I unloaded my rifle with a thunderous roar. The shot tore a nice chunk of whatever the lady side of this thing was called, but she wasn't going down by a long shot. Before I knew it, the male side of the equation had maneuvered himself in such a way that he both knocked me to the ground and managed to wrap the fleshy band that kept these two eternally bound around my neck. That same bit of flesh began flexing and throbbing until I couldn't draw a breath, the various veins and sinew contained under that warm sleeve pulsing like a bag of snakes. Things began swirling and growing ever darker. That's when I died, for the first time. The shaman appeared shortly thereafter, though my enemies never noticed. Although, if they did, I wager they'd have been confused as all get out. See, that fella simply strolled in, leaned low, and whispered in my ear. Use a bone? I didn't quite gather what he was on about, but it seemed like a question I should answer in the affirmative. He reached into my rucksack, pulled out one of the 12 bones of my boy that clattered inside, and shoved that rune-covered ivory femur right in my mouth. It dissolved on contact with my tongue, and I was back in business. I sat up, puked, and roared at my killers who had now sat down to a nice warm meal after their deed was done. What I did next would become a bit of a legend. See, I grabbed the steak knife out of the hand of the twin closest to me, who honestly didn't even resist, probably the shock of a corpse interrupting his din-din. Anyway, I took that blade and commenced to slice that ribbon that held them together like a rabid wolf. But then I had a pang of conscience. These two had been together since day one, so it'd be a shame to take that away from them. Fortunately, I learned to sew at a tender age. I can only imagine the look on Gideon's face when he saw one or two, not sure how they counted themselves. Anyway, saw a member of his posse fixed mouth to crotch of their opposite number like those yin-yang symbols the Chinese fellas out west were so fond of. And imagine it would have to be, as once my work was done, I sunk into the earth outside the Gemini's doorstep, and there I slept for a full year. And so it went. At the very end of each and every year, I'd rise up and put a murder on one of those psychos. Pisces, hard to breathe with concrete in your gills. Taurus, let's just say he wasn't just a bull from the shoulders up, but that would be his undoing when I rammed that tallywhacker straight down his throat. Aries, Leo, Cancer, Sagittarius, Virgo, Libra, Capricorn, Aquarius, dead, 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 and double dead. Don't ask. Year after year I fought, and year after year I lost a little bit more of my boy, piece by piece. Finally, I came to Scorpio. And if you think the other menagerie made for a one-of-a-kind corpse gallery, I can assure you all that that final member of that gang, minus their ringmaster, but I'll get to his arcane ass in a tick. See, after the decade and change of carnival exhibits I'd tussled with, I wouldn't blame you none if you wagered Scorpio would be some kind of insect man, but it wasn't. Hell, it wasn't even a man. As you could guess from the hiring of those darling siblings I jawed about earlier, Gideon didn't give a single shit if those that worked for him were men or women, a real rarity as far as evil posses went in the late 1800s. Of course, half those motherfuckers would be a right challenge to even classify as human. When I sauntered up to that gypsy wagon Lady Scorpio called home, I could just tell I was in for a hell of a time. The scent of burning herbs filled the air, and the roaring flame burning brightly beside the gaudy wagon was doing a solid job of roasting a large pheasant. I hunkered down by the fire. It always feels good to warm my hands after pointing my boots toward the sky for 12 months. The lavender and crimson curtains that covered the entrance to the wagon parted, and she appeared, a raven-haired beauty with eyes as cruel and cold then as a whole nest of vipers could possess. I told Gideon doing your wife and boy was a grave mistake. Well, it's a mistake that will surely put you in your grave, missy. She laughed, and I had to admit it was an unbelievably delicate thing. If that is to be my fate, there is little I can do to change it. I spit at her feet. Yup. Won't you come inside a moment? It's your funeral, you can have it any way you want. I entered the wagon and beheld the interior, which contained nothing save for an opulent bed. I sat down and waited for the show to start. She slid into the bed beside me, pushed me down, and started to rub up against me all feline-like. I grabbed her hair, tugged it hard, and whispered the most romantic thing I could think of into her ear. This is for Lisbeth. I drove the blade of the hunting knife through the back of her head before she could even realize I had pulled it from my left boot. She made that weird gargle-whistling exhale thing that you never really got used to. Then the light in those big brown eyes went dim. Should have started with this one. I managed to remove my knife from her skull and kick her ass right out of the wagon in a near seamless movement. I heard her hit the ground and then... splash? Her skin flew through the curtains and collided with the far wall of the wagon with a sickening sound akin to pig innards being thrown at a whorehouse. Ah, here we go, I said as the giant scorpion clickety-clacked through the entryway. The odd thing about this here scorpion is it had a great set of breasts and a tail equipped with a rather ornery-looking cock where the poisonous sting should have rested. I'm going to fuck you one way or another, lover, the beast spat from a mouth full of spear-like teeth and bad intentions. Get in line, sister. I drew my iron and unloaded on that nightmare with barrel a-blazin'. That damn tail whipped at me again and again as Scorpio's face looked like a vat of prize-winning chili, and to my horror, the loads that appended shot were some sort of vile acid. While the walls of the wagon began to dissolve, the bitch stopped her bucking. Well, fuck me silly. I didn't die this go-around. I wonder if I'll still take a dirt nap. Yep, I said, as I folded into the cold earth. For the first time in years, I dreamed. I saw my family. The unspeakable terror life had become, the soul-crushing scream into the abyss I'd make year after year as I was reborn to put down one monster after another. And I saw that burlap-headed bastard that had made this all so. And I saw children. Unfamiliar children with their faces tinted a glowing blue, the exact same hue of which I had never seen the like of before. Guess what day it is? That's right, the day I end the life of that masked son of a bitch and finally rest in peace. That's the theory anyway. The morning of New Year's Eve, 1899, I had that Jesus thought I mentioned at the start of this yarn, and I found myself wandering the streets of old Manhattan Town, beastly bandages in place. Everything was cold gray, until I got that unholy vision that Gideon was well and truly a man about town, though he wore a false human face over his rough mask. I followed him around a pace, but he seemed to make stops at random, and although he made no indication that he knew I was there, I knew damn well he did. Finally, he got the drop on me after a rather well-executed disappearing act in the Bowery. "Let's retire to my residence and talk this through, eh, dead man?" he purred. "Yep," I answered. We entered the luxurious townhouse Gideon called home. "Please relax," Gideon said, gesturing to an array of sofas and chairs that festooned his abode. I took a load off on a nearby Persian rug. That furniture was doubtless cursed and would spell my doom if I dare put my ass upon it. "Are you a gambling man?" he asked. "Not by nature, no." "I am, and if I had to play my hand, I would wager you want to know why I chose you and your kin to slaughter." The thought had crossed my mind a time or two. "If I'm to be honest," I answered true. "I had heard that if you do someone a cosmic-level injustice, like a random killing, for instance, then powerful magic is revealed to those willing to travel a dark path." "You heard rightly." He gestured toward my rucksack.
"The magic?"
"My son."
"Your son became the rarest of magics? You should be kissing my feet for this gift."
"I see it a tad different."
"I wager you do. Nevertheless, my theory was correct."
"Nevertheless, you should have listened to your pet bug."
"Scorpio? She was always the most in tune of my menagerie."
"Was is the operative word."
"I care little that you killed any of those sideshow attractions."
"You're all heart."
"No, I'm all business."
"How so?" I queried.
"Let's say you give me that last bone in your sack, and I let you walk out of here and live a long and happy life."
"Let's say I do. What does that give me? An eternity without those I love? Those you took from me?"
"True, but a life is a life."
I thought on this a spell, and I had me a revelation.
"Hold on, you'll see."
"Fine. You want the bone? Here it is." I removed my son's skull from the sack and held it up for that snake to see.
"Glorious. Please, let me hold it."
The shaman spoke into my ear for the last time. I nodded. I tossed my boy's skull to Gideon, and as that bone grew ever closer, I drew my pistol and fired. The skull exploded when the bullet hit the bone. The shaman laughed. His Egyptian pal laughed. I laughed. Gideon, however, did most assuredly not laugh. The shards of the skull became missiles and pierced Gideon's mask in 100 razor-sharp volleys. He did that gargle thing and fell like a sack of potatoes.
"That's that, then," I said. I waited for some sort of cosmic redemption. Would I stand before my family once more? Would I finally be able to rest? A glowing letter A appeared in the sky. A glowing S followed it. And another S. Ass. Real cute, I thought, as I finally succumbed to the darkness.
Brent laughed. "Ass. Classic."
"Yeah, man, this game is so easy if you have enough quarters," Todd said. I've beaten it like 100 times. The duo walked away from the cabinet as the attract screen of Satan's shotgun called out to the next player, and Lizabeth and Lazarus died anew. Well, here's to new beginnings that are caused by heavy quarter play. What a great twist ending. We've had two really, really incredible twist endings back to back on Weekly Spooky the last 2 weeks, and two episodes that involve, you know, the great Satan in the title. So what does that say about the future of Weekly Spooky? Well, I can't really tell you. You'll just have to tune in every week and find out a little bit more. But I want to say thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for all the new listeners we've been gaining. I am so thrilled. Thank you so much to the folks who are supporting us every single month on Patreon and really allowing me to keep doing the show even with a global pandemic going on, because seriously, I don't know how I would have done it without you guys. And thank you to everybody who's gone to weeklyspooky.com and bought a t-shirt or a hat and just shown us some support. So here's something I want to ask you guys, because we're about to enter a new year of Weekly Spooky, and I want to hear from you. If you're listening to this right now, I want you to email me at weeklyspooky@gmail.com. Tell me what you enjoy about the show. Tell me what you want more of. I want to hear from you. I want to know, do you want to hear in the new year, do you want to hear more ghost stories? Or do you want some more slasher stuff? Do you want something a little sleazier? What about multi-episode stories? You know, would you be interested in a three-parter, a four-parter? Let me know. I want to know, because I want to make sure that next year is just as spooky for you as this year, because while we've done over a year's worth of episodes, 2020 is the first full year of nothing but Weekly Spooky, and I can't tell you how happy I am about it. I really love doing this. It's really brought me a lot of joy, and I've enjoyed working with all of our authors. I wish I could name all of you guys, but that would take up too much time. Thank you all so much for all the stories you have given us, all the stories you will be giving us, and a huge thank you to our Patreon podcast boosters. These are folks who have joined our Patreon, which you can join for as little as $1 a month to help us make podcasts and videos and stuff, but they've paid just a little extra to have their names shouted out right here on the show, and that is Kevin Fry, Rob Fields, Craig Cohen, Jeff Hilton, and Karen Wiemet. Thank you all so much. And I of course, have to thank my producer, Daniel Wilder, who wrote this episode. There'd be no show at all without him. And our composer, Ray Mattis, who has made so many great pieces of music for you to enjoy on the show. So anyway, my friends, I'm going to get out of here. Happy New Year, my friends, and I will talk at you in the new year.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me. Ha 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 ha.